so.
Out of not knowing.
Good afternoon, and I will call the Monday, April 27th meeting of the Senate Committee on Commerce and Workforce Development to order. And members, we have a very full agenda, this being our last hearing before the deadline to move Senate bills. So we are going to get our work done. And Senator Przanski.
If for some reason we don't have paperwork, is it the chair's desire to maybe have a recess till tomorrow to let paperwork catch up?
A recess till tomorrow? I think we have plans that would allow us to move forward
with the bills.
On the bills,
okay.
That we have, although that is always a possibility.
That's an option you want to consider before you gavel out.
Okay. So I think we're going to take these bills in the order that they are on the printed agenda. And I am going to start by opening a work session on Senate Bill 966. And Jeremy, it's been a while since we heard this bill, so why don't you remind us?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 966 creates family leave benefits insurance program to provide benefits to employees taking family leave to care for an infant or a newly adopted child, newly placed foster child under 18 years of age, adopted or foster child older than 18 years of age if the child is incapable of self-care because of a mental or physical disability, or a family member with a serious health condition. The bill establishes family leave benefits insurance account in the state treasury. Requires employers to withhold premiums not to exceed 2 cents per hour worked from subject employers from employees' earnings and pay premiums into the account. Applies to employers with 25 or more employees. Permits non-subject employers to opt in commencing July 1st, 2013. Requires reports and payments to Department of Revenue under existing statute. Continuously appropriates monies in family leave benefits insurance account to the Bureau of Labor and Industries. And requires BOLI to administer claims for benefits. It establishes qualifications for receiving benefits. It establishes amounts of and limitations on benefits. It allows employees to first file claims on or after January 1, 2012. Requires BOLI to notify the employer of a claim within 5 business days. It creates unlawful employment practice for discrimination under the Act. It includes civil penalty provision and establishes personal liability for certain individuals upon employer default. Declares an emergency effective on passage. The we adopted the dash two amendment.
I don't think
no.
We have adopted the
we
dash
haven't
two
adopted
amendment.
The dash. We have a proposed dash two amendment, which makes technical changes to the bill, which clarify how benefits are determined and paid. You each have a copy of that amendment. And we have a revenue statement issued and a fiscal statement issued on the dash two amended bill.
And thank you, Jeremy, for that explanation. All of our paperwork is complete on this bill, and members, we do actually, so those amendments were minor technical amendments that the Bureau of Labor came forward with. So that's what we're looking at.
Chair,
Senator Przanski.
I move the dash twos into Senate Bill 966.
Senator Przanski moves the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 966. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Is there any objection to the amendment? Okay, the amendment is adopted. Senator, and this bill does already have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, so the motion would be to the floor do pass and with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means by prior reference. Senator Przanski.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 966 as amended by the dash twos to the floor with a do pass recommendation, but with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means as previously indicated.
Senator Przanski has moved Senate Bill 966 as amended by the dash two amendments to the floor with a do pass recommendation and with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Senator George.
Do you want me to say something?
You are welcome to say something.
I'm just going to vote no on the bill. My problem is that I understand for a lot of people in higher incomes, 2 cents per hour doesn't seem like very much, but I know that a lot of people that I work with, that when they get a nickel per hour raise, it's a significant thing in their paycheck. And to think about the fact that we're going to pull back 40% of that raise in this type of situation, I just think that this could end up being a big transfer of wealth from our working poor to middle class and upper middle class families. And at this point, I can't see the fairness in that. And so I'll be voting there.
Thank you for your comment. Further discussion? Yes, Senator Telford.
Well, I'll just be voting no. Again, it's made up, it's a seemingly nominal amount being withheld from somebody's paycheck, but I think I read somewhere that only 4.2% of the people will take advantage of it. So there's a lot of people putting money out of their own paychecks into this fund where they'll never recognize the benefit. So,
thank you for your comment. Further discussion? Well, I appreciate the concern for our hardworking, low-income Oregonians, but I think that this bill is actually aimed at exactly those people and many other Oregonians who are working hard every day and can't necessarily afford, because they have no paid time off, to take time off when they have a child that needs them at home, or they have a family member who's dying or seriously ill and needs them. And that's what this bill is aimed at. I think it's a very small investment. I also would point out that the 2 cents per hour, by the language of the bill, is to be reduced by the Labor Commissioner if funds are more than adequate, which we're quite confident that they will be. So I feel like the bill will help a lot of people, and I think Ways and Means will take a good look at what they need to look at, and hopefully we'll move forward from there. So, seeing no further discussion on the motion, Pam, would you please call the roll?
Nope.
Aye.
Aye.
No.
Aye. Motion carries. And I will. We don't need a carrier because it's going to Ways and Means. So I will close the work session on Senate Bill 966. And moving right along on our agenda, I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 519. Jeremy, please remind us about this bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 519 prohibits adverse employment action against employees for declining to participate in employer-sponsored meeting or communication about religious or political matters, creates employee civil cause of action, requires the employer to post notice of employee rights, provides exceptions for religious or political organizations, and for legally required or voluntary meetings or communications. We have a proposed -1 amendment would clarify that the bill would not prohibit mandatory meetings of the employer's executives or administrative personnel to discuss issues, including those subjects covered by the bill. We have a no revenue impact, and we have a minimal fiscal impact, minimal expenditure impact.
Thank you, Jeremy, and both of those reflect that -1 amendment. So,
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Przanski.
I move the -1s into Senate Bill 519.
Senator Przanski moves the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 519. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Is there any objection to the amendment? If not, the amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair.
Senator presents.
I move Senate Bill 519 as amended by the -1s to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Przanski moves Senate Bill 519 as amended by the -1s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And is there any discussion?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Ronis Anderson.
I will be voting yes. I had concerns. Still do have concerns of unintended consequences. In talking with numerous farmers in my district, they have a lot of concerns regarding just general conversations that they have where they talk about religious or political or issues, and would hope that this is something that's not going to be abused. So I still have concerns, but I needed to get on the record that I will be a yes, but still have grave concerns of the unintended consequences.
Thank you for your comment. Further discussion? Okay, and I do think the record at our first hearing was pretty clear that just incidental conversations that would happen in the course of business are not what this bill is meant to prevent. And so I think we have a record that's pretty clear, and I agree with you. It shouldn't be abused in that way. Yes, Senator Prezantsky.
Yeah, Madam Chair, the reason I made the motion on this one is because I think it does give some more parameters for the owners of the businesses with their executive staff. And as you noted on the testimony, it doesn't stop anyone from voluntarily participating in these discussions. It doesn't just prohibits mandatory type of meetings that would force someone to participate in those type of discussions where they choose not to.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion? Okay, Pam, please call the roll.
No.
Aye.
Aye.
No.
Aye. Motion carries.
Madam Chair. I'd like to serve notice of a possible minority report.
Senator George serves notice of a possible minority report, and I, the chair will carry this bill. Okay, and I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 519. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2203A, and only for the purpose of carrying that bill over, because we are still awaiting the paperwork back from Legislative Fiscal, and I don't want to keep people here indefinitely. So we'll carry that over to our next hearing, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 2203. And next, I will open a work session on Senate Bill 863.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 863 authorizes the Economic and Community Development Department to reimburse local filmmakers for all or portion of expenses paid in Oregon to produce smaller films using Oregon residents for production. Defines local filmmaker, continuously appropriates 5% of monies in the Oregon Production Investment Fund to reimburse local filmmakers for expenses of producing local films. There's no revenue impact, and the fiscal statement has been issued, and that should be in your packet.
And, yeah, we do have a fiscal impact. There are no amendments on this bill. I don't think this had a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, but because it does reallocate monies, and it does say on the fiscal impact statement, actually describes the reallocation of the monies. Yes,
Madam
Senator
Chair,
Prezantsky?
I'm ready to make a motion, and the motion I'll be making is to send this to the floor with a note to the President's office for review as compared to doing an outright request. Let them review it.
Right. That makes sense. Okay. Why don't you go ahead, Senator Prezantsky?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 863 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, with notice to the President's office to review to determine whether or not they believe it should be moved to Ways and Means.
Thank you. Senator Prezantsky moves Senate Bill 863 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and with the request that the Senate President's office review the bill to see if it needs to be referred to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator George.
After last hearing, I had a lengthy conversation with the industry and just sort of re-expressed my concerns about the fact that I hope that someday we can take the industry and wean it off of public resources. And so I think this is a reasonable division within the program. But at the same time, I hope that industries don't become dependent on public subsidies for the long term. And I hopefully this industry matures to a level where we can take that off of selling tax credits to gain revenue for them.
Thank you.
I will be voting yes on the bill.
Thank you for your comment. Is there further discussion? Pam, please call the roll.
Senator George.
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries. And because this is headed to the floor, Senator Telfer, would you carry this bill on the floor? Great. Senator Telfer will carry the bill. And I will close the work session on Senate Bill 863. And going to open a work session on Senate Bill 894. Jeremy, please remind us about this bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 894 requires that the Oregon Department of Transportation use one-half of 1% of federal funds received for on-the-job training. Requires a biennial report. We have a proposed Dash 1 amendment. The Dash 1 amendment replaces the bill, requires ODOT to expend one-half of 1%, up to $1.8 million, to increase diversity in highway construction, specifies uses of the monies, and it still requires a biennial report to the legislature. We have no revenue impact, and we do not have a fiscal on either the original bill or the amendment. The amendment, you have a copy of the amendment, and basically it sets, in addition to capping the total amount, it sets out a list of uses that the money could be used for.
Thank you. And Jeremy, you members, you should have that amendment, and a copy of it was stapled to the staff measure summary that should be in front of you. And there are some people in the audience, even though this is a work session, who I think would like to come forward and explain the amendment. So please come forward now. Great. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Commerce Committee. And if you could please introduce yourself and then tell us what's going on with the bill.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Connie Ashbrook. I'm Executive Director of Oregon Tradeswomen. And I just want to say that we've had great conversations about this bill with community, with minority contractors involved, with the Oregon Department of Transportation, Associated General Contractors, and the building trades. And I'm very pleased to have those folks here today to explain the kinds of conversations we've had. We've very, very positive forward movement towards looking at the positive impact of these bills. And I'm actually going to ask Annette Talbot, also from Oregon Tradeswomen, to talk about some of the details. But I wanted to start by talking about the very, very positive conversations we've had and what a great pleasure it was to get a chance to discuss some of the things that were involved. Thank you.
Thank you. Whoever's... great. Okay.
Who are you?
Musical chairs here.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Annette Talbot, Oregon Tradeswomen. As Connie said, we have worked through on the 894 amendments. The cap was suggested by AGC, and we felt that that made sense. We've been more specific about the actual source of federal funds, which had some anxiety from the ODOT about what pots of money they were talking about, and they're here if you want clarity on that. We also laid out some of the specific programs that we were talking to, because as the bill was drafted, it only referenced on-the-job training, and we really wanted it to be apprenticeship-based and really getting people into the trades in real jobs. And I think that although it may be considered somewhat of a work in progress, and John Rekowitz can speak to that as well, that we really are getting very close to getting it in a form that can be passed into law. We do have ongoing conversations with ODOT about which of these activities are specifically permissible, so we will make sure that they are able to check in with their federal partners to make sure that the activities listed are acceptable activities under the Transportation Equity Act of the 21st century, which is that 23 USC reference you see there. That's what that refers to. So, and the two gentlemen to my right are here to, I think, express some support for the Dash 1.
Okay, great.
I'll be very brief, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Bob Shiprack, Oregon Building Trades. If I could, I'll speak first to this bill. We only had the one concern in the printed bill that the money would go to on-the-job training. Was what, as you'll recall my testimony to us, that is a trainee program allowed by the Federal Department of Labor that, in fact, ODOT contractors and labor actually tried to get out of, but they wouldn't let us. So I really appreciate the hard work that Connie and Annette did to actually specify what the money would be used for and what it was really intended for all along. So I just want to lend my support for this package of bills. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Rakowitz with AGC. And as Annette mentioned, we have been in discussions. They've been very productive discussions. We were a bit concerned because it was not specific enough. And you can hear there were three levels of specificity that have been added. So we're very pleased about that. We thought it was important that you spell out the kinds of services. We have things we fund as an industry that potentially could apply for these funds. ACE Academy, you've probably heard along the way. Other activities that we're investing in ourselves. So we're very pleased about the progress on this bill, and we really believe this is an important issue for us to get involved in, and as discussions going forward, I believe this may have a ways and means referral as they go forward. We just want to be sure and be actively engaged and as cooperatively if we've been engaged to date. And thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel of witnesses?
Yes,
Senator Manis Anderson.
Does the money then, I always get concerned because there's money that we need roads because roads makes the economy going and it provides jobs. Will this money be taken away from those jobs, from those projects that would benefit our economy?
Madam Chair, Senator Manis Anderson, the agency is here to comment on that, but that is one of the reasons we've reached agreement that the bill should go to Ways and Means, and we would ask you to add a subsequent referral because we do need to have that conversation. ODOT's budget is up just now, I gather, this week, and so they need to look at the source of the money and what the money could be spent for. I do think that these dollars actually do have job-related impacts. As we talked about earlier, there are projected shortages in many trades, not all, and we think that this provides that ability to make sure you're feeding that pipeline so there are people there to work in those jobs in the future, and that pipeline takes sometimes 4 to 5 years. So we have to look forward because projects are very expensive if you don't have enough staff. So I think the answer is sort of twofold. Yes, we do need to have that conversation with ODOT about where the money comes from, but I think also that there are jobs that will come out of this in terms of percentages.
Thank you.
If I could, Madam
yes,
Chair,
go ahead.
Speak to that, Madam Chair, Senator Bonus Anderson. That was our concern originally with the bill. There was no cap whatsoever on it, so we asked for a cap. And I would agree that ODOT needs to be more thoroughly involved in this, and through Ways and Means hearings, I believe that's what will happen. We're always concerned about whether we're actually building projects or not. There is a need, though, for the kind of investments to bring people into our industry. And I referenced earlier, our own industry is active. Engaged in investing funds as well. So we think this is a much improved bill over what it was, and we'd like to continue to be active in the discussion going forward for exactly the reason you're talking about.
Do any other questions for these witnesses? Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Senator Pazansky.
I move the dash ones in the Senate Bill 894.
And Senator Pazansky has moved the Dash 1 amendments into Senate Bill 894. Any discussion on the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? Hearing none, so ordered.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pazansky.
I move Senate Bill 894 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and request the President consider placing a referral to Ways and Means on this bill.
Senator Pazansky moved Senate Bill 894 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and with a request that the bill be referred to the ways to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any discussion? I'm sorry. Actually, right. We actually need first to do a. We could adopt the amendment, which we did. But if you could just withdraw your motion momentarily.
Madam Chair, withdraw my motion.
And we do need a rule suspension because we haven't gotten the fiscal on this yet. So somebody could move to suspend the rules. In fact, I will move to suspend the rules for the purpose of allowing the bill to move forward and have the fiscal catch up with it. So is there any objection to suspending the rules? That does need to be done unanimously. Okay, the rules are suspended. And now, Senator Pazansky, again, your motion.
And Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 894 as amended by the dash ones to the floor with a due pass recommendation and ask and request that the President consider a referral to the Committee on Ways and Means for this bill.
Senator Prezanski moves Senate Bill 894 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and requests that a subsequent referral to Ways and Means be added. Is there discussion?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator George.
I appreciate the hard work that the work group did on the bill, and obviously I think the bill is a significant improvement over what was proposed. My fear, obviously, is anytime we're drawing money out of ODOT right now, we have a lot of transportation projects that need to be built right now. And I think I've been bugging ODOT all the time about making sure we have small businesses being able to compete with the large businesses getting the contracts. I'm getting a lot of support from the Department of Transportation on doing some of those things. And so at this point, I can't bring myself to taking any dollars out of Department of Transportation and diverting those away from anything that could be building roads at this point. So I'll be voting no, but with a nod to the fact that I think a lot of good work was done on this bill.
Thank you. Further discussion? Okay, Pam, would you please call the roll?
Senator
George. No.
Aye.
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 Vice Chair
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. And
carrier.
Yeah, I suppose we can assign me as a carrier because I don't think we're going to need a carrier, since I do think it'll go to Ways and Means, unless somebody else would like to volunteer to carry the bill, just in case. Okay. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 894. And I'm going to open the work session on Senate Bill 895. And give Jeremy a minute to catch up here.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 895 creates a Construction Diversity Oversight Board and prescribes composition, powers, and duties of the board. Requires the Bureau of Labor and Industries to provide staff assistance to board. Establishes Construction Diversity Oversight Fund. Requires that monies from fund be continuously appropriated to carry out the purposes of the board. It declares an emergency and becomes effective on passage. Right now we have, in your packet, you would have four amendments, -2, 3, 4, and 5. They changed the composition. Well, I think we'll have testimony on what the amendments do. On this one, we have no revenue impact, and we do not have a fiscal statement on the bill yet. And this bill, unlike the other one, does carry a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay, and I think we have people in the audience prepared to talk about these amendments. So please come forward. Welcome back.
Madam Chair, Ned Talbot, Vice Chair, Oregon Tradeswomen Board. This bill, again, thanks to the individuals who were up here before for working with us. We worked on some amendments to address some of the concerns that were expressed. One of them was clear that contractors have a level of expertise on highway and bridge are very different than the contractors who have a level of expertise on building buildings. So we wanted it to be clear that the contractors referenced in the bill had expertise in one or the other of the fields, so that the oversight panel was balanced. In addition, in response to comments from AGC, we've added a third member who will be a construction contractor. And then the reference to the Oregon University System and the community colleges, we decided that the best people that they could appoint to the board would be people who had capital construction experience. So we put that in there because those are the people who really know the down and dirty of putting projects together and how to really provide the best input on this diversity board. We have taken the director of the employment department off only because we didn't want to keep the board from getting much larger. We hope that they'll continue to provide feedback to the oversight board. That's the -2 and the -4. The -3 basically asked that the Bureau of Labor, as part of their support for the board, would seek grant funds. There are several private foundations that are investing in diversity initiatives as best practices around the country in transportation projects. So we would hope that we might be able to seek some funds from that so that we're not relying just on federal funds. And then the -5 would start the project earlier this fall so that maybe we have some best practices in place to suggest for the next construction season. Construction in Oregon is so seasonal. If you miss the season, you really want
to be prepared. So if we get started early in September, then we'll have the opportunity perhaps to have some ideas in place for construction projects that would happen next spring.
Madam Chair, yes. Members of the committee, for the record, John Rakowitz with AGC. Again, as a result of discussions, as Annette, and very cooperative discussions, we've made some suggestions. They've been incorporated. Of course, we would like to see more contractors than there is even under the amendment, because this is about construction. But we understand, and we are particularly pleased that those additions have been made. As well, we also requested that if there were additional non-contractors, that they actually have expertise in the area of capital construction. And we believe that will give this diversity board a much more solid foundation. So we're pleased with the improvements to the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for... Yes, Senator George.
Sure. I'm sorry, I'm an alpha, and I don't think we have the fiscal on this. What is the flow of money? What is the 0.02%, the 0.2% estimated to be flowed?
The relationship between the two bills is one of the reasons why we want them both to go to Ways and Means. The money in 894 is ODOT specific, so it's highway money. So obviously that cannot be used for anything other than what the feds are going to permit you to use it for, which is highway related construction. So the reason why we have the dash, three amendment, which is for Boley to seek other grants, so we would have funds available to provide other pilot projects for non-highway projects. So there needs to be another source of funds. In addition, in conversations with ODOT, and this would continue in Ways and Means, they have to have some clearance from Federal Highway, as I understand, and Joan Plank is here, that whether they could completely relinquish authority over those ODOT funds or just have the Oversight Board recommend some things they spend it on is still fairly unclear, and we obviously want them to be in clear authority of what they do with the money, so we need to work that out and make sure that they have a sign-off from the feds. And we're fine if it's just a recommendation from the Oversight Board. That's very acceptable. We just want the community-based groups that serve women and minorities and the contractors to all have input, including the building trades, that all have input about how they spend the money.
And Senator George, unlike the other bill, this one does already have a referral to Ways and Means, so it will go there for sure. Mm-hmm. Any other questions for these witnesses? Okay, thank you very much for your explanation. Mm-hmm. And before we can adopt the amendments, but before we move the bill, we would need that. So, Senator, we are in a work session.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'm going to go ahead and start moving amendments individually,
mm-hmm.
or do you want them together?
No, let's do them one at a time.
All right. I move the dash twos into Senate Bill 895.
Senator Prezansky moves the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 895. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Is there any objection to the amendment? Amendment is adopted. Senator Prezansky.
Madam Chair, I move the dash threes into Senate Bill 895.
Senator Prezansky moves the dash three amendment to Senate Bill 895. Any discussion on the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? Amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, I move the dash fours into Senate Bill 895.
Senator Prezansky moves the dash four amendments into Senate Bill 895. Any discussion? Any objection? Amendment is adopted.
And Madam Chair, I move the dash fives into Senate Bill 895.
Senator Prezansky moves the dash five amendments to Senate Bill 895. Any discussion? Any objection? Amendment is adopted. Now, the chair would ask for a rules suspension for the purpose of moving the bill and allowing, which will have to go to Ways and Means already, and allowing the fiscal to follow it. Is there any objection to a rule suspension? Okay, the rules are suspended. Senator Prezansky.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 895, as amended by the dash twos, the dash threes, the dash fours, and the dash fives, to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay, Senator Prezansky moves Senate Bill 895 as amended with the dash twos, threes, fours, and fives to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee by prior reference. Is there discussion on this motion?
Madam Chair, same objections that I had before as far as I like the idea, I love the concept, and I think you guys have done a nice job putting the amendments together. I'm a little worried about money flowing out of the Department of Transportation, out of those projects, and if there's other sources, grants, Bureau of Labor and Industries, and we can remove the ODOT, taking money away from ODOT, I'd be supportive of the bill, but at this point, with the way it's drafted, I'll vote no, but that's how I'll vote for it. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you for your comment. Yes, Senator Mona Sanderson.
And again, I really feel women and minorities have definitely been underrepresented. I still have concerns because of the terrible economic times that we're having now, but I still am because the policy is good, I want to at least move it down to Ways and Means and let them make the decisions.
Okay. Thank you. Additional discussion? Okay. Pam, please call the roll.
No.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries. You don't need a carrier because this is going to Ways and Means, so I will close the work session on Senate Bill 895 and open a work session on Senate Bill 896.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Senate Bill 896 defines diversity, directs the Department of Transportation to establish a contractor and workforce diversity pilot program to increase diversity among contractors, subcontractors, and workers working in connection with the department's public improvement contracts. We have three amendments that have been proposed, which are in your packet, which I assume that we'll have testimony on. There is no revenue impact, and mysteriously, unlike the last two bills, we have received a fiscal statement, and that's also included in your packet.
Right.
And that's it.
And it's going to Ways and Means.
Mm-hmm. Does it have a referral
it
already?
Does not have a it does not have a subsequent referral
that
at
we
this
can
point.
Certainly yeah. add one.
Big enough.
So. And I think there has been a lot of discussion going on about this bill. Would you like to come forward and tell us about it? If you could please say your name again for the record.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Connie Ashbrook. I'm Director of Oregon Tradeswomen Incorporated. And I think the important part about this bill is that it really gives us a chance to try things out as a pilot, and it gives us a chance to look at what has worked in other areas of the country. It gives us a chance to do an analysis and then to make some recommendations and then to try it out in a very pilot way. So it's using a type of contracting that could give us a result that is something that we've been looking to have.
Madam Chair, Annette Talbot, Oregon Tradeswomen. I think the debate that we're having in AGC would weigh in, and I'm sure ODOT would also if they felt the need, is whether or not there is a sufficient time for them to actually complete a study within the next biennium and start a pilot program. And we understand that that may prove challenging for them. We would like to see it still as a pilot program, and it is a continued conversation about whether or not there is sufficient time for them to actually start a pilot program before the end of the biennium, or whether we need to, for purposes of timing, actually switch it to just a study. So the -3s actually would do that. We would prefer to see it stay in its current version, only because in our informal coalition of minority contractors, they really don't want to wait till upcoming biennium, till the next biennium after that to start the pilot. So we don't have complete consensus on this, but we do have consensus we're going to keep on talking about it. So we would ask that the bill, at least in some stage, which you all can decide what that looks like, go down to Ways and Means so we can continue the conversation.
So was that a request to just send the bill as it is without the amendments?
that would be our request, but I believe Mr. Rakowitz may have a different
continue to work
request.
On it. Okay. Mr. Rakowitz, please go ahead.
And, Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Rakowitz with AGC. Unlike the other two bills, we believe this bill needs more work. And the reason is and it's outlined it, we're in discussions just before we came into the committee trying to sort this out. The world of public contracting is very complex, and much of the, at least the models from what I can tell, have more to do with non-highway results, not building, transit, etc. Highway construction, in fact, in most states of the country, you don't have a single AGC. You have a highway contractors AGC, and you have a building contractors AGC. They are that different. So what I am asking on this one is that we would ask that it be sent down to Ways and Means, be considered with the other two bills. There have been a lot of considerations brought up by members of the committee, and the whole be looked at, and in particular, I just want to go on the record, we are not opposed to this bill. We just think there's a lot more work to ensure that it really does take into account when you're talking highway, you have to think highway, you have to know about highway. It's a really different piece of the business and the industry.
Okay. Thank you for the comments, Senator George.
Madam Chair, on the other two bills, I clearly understand the direction, but this seems to be a duplication of efforts for what the Department of Transportation is already doing. And that's why I'm tending to vote no on this particular piece of legislation. It doesn't do the fiscal. Give me a reason why that I'm wrong on this, because it seems to be just duplicating efforts, and I'm not sure in this environment I want to do that.
Madam Chair, Senator George, my sense is that because this bill is ODOT specific and we're not looking at the whole entire public contracting, we're only looking at highway, and my understanding from ODOT, and again, they're in the audience, is that they have not engaged in an alternative contracting project with diversity as one of the goals. They do negotiate some projects where they don't necessarily use the low bid, and they do have that authority, but they have not used that process with diversity as one of those goals, is my understanding. And I'm sure Joan can correct me. So we're asking them in this instance to go one step further and seek permission from the feds to use diversity as a goal, as other transit agencies have done. TriMet, for specific, has done this. But they operate with a different federal partner at the federal level. So I think the agency realizes they have to do some ongoing conversations with the Federal Highway Administration. We're hopeful with the Obama administration that diversity would be something that they would find as an acceptable pilot program criteria, and so they would approve a pilot. The key is making sure whatever pilot we do really has clear goals, and we're in agreement with that, and that we know whether we've succeeded or not at the end of the game. That's a pilot, you know, no one's going to walk away happy if we don't have a successful pilot that shows us some learning lessons from it. So we're still having that debate about how fast can we move. We have some in our informal coalition that really want us to go right ahead, full steam right now, but we also are appreciative of the conversations that have to go on with the feds and an agency. So this is where we haven't quite come to as much of a consensus where we are on the other bills, pretty close.
Chair Roosevelt.
Yes, go ahead.
Senator George, the technical language even that you use, and that's why this bill is so much more complex. The other two are relatively understandable on their face. This one, when you get into the technicalities of contracting and when you get into using certain funds and when you say transit agency versus highway, that is why we believe this bill deserves, it just needs to be worked on more. And we, like I said, we were just hammering away on it, and I don't know what the solution is, but we would strongly urge that the bill be considered with the other two, but also be considered for its particular and unique goals. And we'd like to see those goals be really specific. For instance, is the goal of this pilot to expand the number of women and minority contractors, to increase the amount of business existing women and minority contractors? I mean, there are so many levels to this conversation. We don't believe the bill yet has reached a level of specificity that it could be successful. That's our take on the bill.
Okay. Thanks for the discussion, and I don't see any other questions for you. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your consideration.
And we are in a work session, members. We do not need a rule suspension on this one because we already have the fiscal, and we've been requested not to adopt these amendments. Senator Brzezinski.
Madam Chair, I'm going to go ahead and just move Senate Bill 896 to the floor without a recommendation, with its subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and I'll speak to my motion.
Okay, Senator Brzezinski moves Senate Bill 896 to the floor without recommendation, and requests that a subsequent referral to Ways and Means be added to the bill and to your motion.
Madam Chair, based on the testimony we've heard today, it sounds like it's premature for us to be looking at any of these three or other proposed amendments, and this is a means, knowing the lateness of our hour for the committee, to move bills from the Senate chamber that are originated here to have it move into the next process of the Ways and Means, and that they should continue the discussions and decide on which of the amendments would be appropriate, and then determine what type of recommendation it should have to the floor.
Thank you for your comment. Further discussion? Senator Monson-Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm hate to send a bill down to Ways and Means. That's not in good form, because they are not a policy. We're supposed to be dealing with a policy, but I know this is an important bill for you, so I will be giving a courtesy yes, and I'm glad that it was made without recommendation.
Thank you, Senator Monson-Anderson. Okay. Seeing no further discussion, the motion is the bill go to the floor without recommendation, and that a subsequent, and with a request that a subsequent referral to Ways and Means be added to the bill. Pam, would you please call the roll?
Senator
Zillard. No. Aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries. And I guess I can carry it in case we need one. I will close the work session on Senate Bill 896 and open a work session on Senate Bill 821.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 821 permits collective bargaining unit and public employer to establish a retiree medical trust, voluntary employees beneficiary association, health reimbursement arrangement, or other health care agreement for health care expenses of employees or retirees. It exempts school districts subject to coverage under the Oregon Educators Benefit Board and requires that agreements comply with the insurance code. The bill has no revenue impact, and despite our best efforts, we have been unable to obtain a fiscal as of right now.
And we previously adopted Dash 1 and Dash 2 amendments to this bill. You already describe those?
That's correct. Well, they were included in what the measure does. The two amendments that we adopted require that the agreements comply with the insurance code, and then we also exempted school districts, which are subject to coverage under the Oregon Educators Benefit Board.
Thank you. Okay, so that's the explanation of the bill. Unfortunately, we don't have a fiscal in front of us, so the chair would ask for a rule suspension in order to allow the bill to move forward and for the fiscal to catch up. Is there any objection to suspending the rules? Okay, the rules are suspended.
Madam Chair.
And Senator Brzezinski.
I move Senate Bill 821 as amended previously by the Dash 1s and the Dash 2s. To the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay, Senator Brzezinski moves Senate Bill 821 as amended with the Dash 1 and Dash 2 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
I believe we can request a referral to Ways and Means. And maybe the President may be able to refer it back to us. I don't know. But I think the only thing we can do is request a referral.
Oh, right. And because it doesn't have a referral right now.
Okay.
And with a request that the bill be referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
Right. Amend my motion to request the President consider a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay. So rephrasing the motion, it's to the floor is amended with a due pass recommendation and a request that a referral to Ways and Means be added to the bill. Senator Telfer.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I was okay with suspending the rules because as I read this, and what I've been told is this is an employee expense, not an employer expense. I can't see where there's going to be a whole lot of fiscal impact. That's what I'm assuming. It's going to remain an employee expense and not an employer expense.
That's my interpretation of the bill as well. So we'll see what the intention is. I mean, what the decision is. Any further discussion on the bill? Okay, Pam, would you please call the roll on the motion?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Motion carries. Is there a volunteer to carry this in case, for some reason, it does not go to Ways and Means?
Sure.
Senator Przanski will carry. Okay, great. And I will close the work session on Senate Bill 821. So we're making great progress, and I think that moves us through our work sessions.
Oh, yeah, one more.
We have one more bill. So I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 972. And we do have a sign-up sheet, and I think Representative Holvey had some testimony on the bill, and I see his staff in the room, so would you like to come forward first and introduce the bill?
Madam Chair, I might be able to go grab Representative Holvey out of committee.
Oh.
It looks like he might be at a spot to come testify.
Okay. How about, is he nearby?
He is. If there's a chance for
okay.
me to...
And actually, I failed to let the committee administrator explain the bill, so we'll do that
we'll talk slow.
To find him. Yes, very slowly. Jeremy.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'll do my best.
Double space.
Senate Bill 972 requires that for every public works contract exceeding $750,000, public agency must certify that every employer under contract is an approved apprenticeship training agent. Requires contractor and subcontractor to contracts in excess of $750,000 to employ apprentices for at least 15% of the total hours worked. Requires the Bureau of Labor and Industries to develop a plan to increase diversity among workers, including apprenticeships employed in public works projects. Requires advisory committee to evaluate apprenticeship participation and to assist Boley in administering the plan. Provides a civil penalty for violation of the Act, and directs that monies paid in penalty be paid into state apprenticeship and training education fund. We have one amendment, which is a dash one, which is attached in your packet. And that amendment, basically, I think we'll hear some testimony to it, but it basically requires more specific 10% of total hours worked on the public work be in apprenticeship occupations. We have a no revenue impact, and we do not have a fiscal on the bill itself or on the amended bill. And Representative Holvey.
Aha! Representative Holvey has arrived. Thank you, Jeremy, for that explanation. And Representative...
And the timing.
Yes, and the timing was impeccable. Representative Holvey, welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm here to speak to you about Senate Bill 972. This is a bill on apprenticeships I've been working on for quite some time. Served on apprenticeship committees before I was a legislator for 7 or 8 years prior to being in the legislature, and still actively work with apprenticeship programs. This bill is about requiring a certain amount of job opportunities be available on public projects with what's called an apprenticeship utilization requirement. The bill essentially, you'll have my written testimony, the real reason for this particular bill is in the construction industry and in most of the construction trades, we are looking at a pretty severe workforce shortage. going forward. And even though in today's world our economy is very slow with stimulus monies coming and the hopes that this economy does turn around, when it does, our construction projects are going to be hard-pressed at supplying the skilled workforce that we need. And one of the big problems with doing that has always been getting people into the trades through apprenticeship programs and getting them to stay there. The apprenticeship programs offer the ability to learn a trade while you earn. And it is a model that many industries look at, and it's something that we've heard in our workforce committee on the House side many times over as the problem of trying to get people interested in these vocational type of careers. So the Oregon Department of Employment Department has estimated that by 2016 we're going to have a shortage of 14,000 construction workers. And even at the pace that we're graduating people out of apprenticeship programs, we're still short that 14,000. One of the big problems that I see with my experience is that we invest money into training. Many contractors invest private money into training. And when the contract is over or the economy gets slow, apprentices get laid off, and that investment that we just put into training goes away with that apprentice. And they look for something else to do. And then when we have another project come forward, they're not there, and we have to start all over. This has been a long-time problem, and the policy in the state of Oregon and prevailing wage laws currently states that it is there to encourage apprenticeship and training to the skill standards in the fields. And from my standpoint, we fall short of that in the bidding process, where we have contractors who do not provide apprenticeship opportunities bidding against contractors that do have provide apprenticeship opportunities. Senate Bill 972 basically puts that state policy or that state policy on prevailing wage of encouraging apprentices on public projects to requiring that a certain percentage of hours worked on public projects will be performed by apprentices. It applies only to contracts or subcontracts that are over $750,000. It starts out in 2010 with a 10% requirement. In 2011, it goes to 12.5%, and in 2012, it goes to 15%. 2011, it was 12.5%. There is a penalty in this bill for noncompliance for every hour that they're short of meeting those particular goals. That money would go into an apprenticeship and training education fund to provide apprenticeship committee oversight, and also to provide school and community outreach to help vocational programs like the ACE Academy and many other pre-apprenticeship programs that help bring youth and diversity into our construction industry. This is a pretty simple concept. It's been in this building every session since I've been here. I've introduced a bill similar to this last session that did not have a fiscal impact. I don't know if the committee has their fiscal statement back on this bill yet, but I'm hoping they do. Our neighbors to the north in the state of Washington have implemented this type of requirement, and I think from my testimony you can see that the Washington State Building Trades Council commented on the success of that program and being able to double the amount of apprentices they have in the workforce. And from my standpoint, this is something the state of Oregon needs to do. It has some opposition to the bill, but it also has a lot of support. It is about making sure we have opportunities for people in this particular field. I urge you to send 972 with the due pass recommendation to wherever it may be going.
Thank you, Representative Hovley. The bill does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, so that's where it would go. And Senator Manus Anderson.
It's too bad when we get the building trades. Some are in favor of it, some are not in favor of it. Can you see a meeting of the minds with that group at all?
I have talked to many in the building trades, you know, of those that support, and I'm sure some will speak for themselves. I know the carpenters and the operators and the laborers have expressed support for this, as well as the cement masons. We also have IBW 48, who's told me they support this proposal as well. I've spoken to the UA, the Plumbers and Steam Fitters 290. They're not supporting it, but they're not opposed to it, that last conversation I had. And so the bulk of the opposition, I think, comes from the bricklayers and perhaps the iron workers. I'm not really quite sure about that, but there are a couple trades that that don't want to have this kind of requirement. Some contractors support it, some don't. But from my standpoint, this really is about policy and about trying to get job opportunities for the future workforce. Our average age in the construction industry, at least in carpenters I'm aware of, is about 47 years old. And our vocational education in the schools, as you know, has muchly disappeared. And so it's very difficult to get people interested in going into these professions. And they pay good money. And they're great career opportunities. As you know, not everybody goes to college. And we need to make them aware of these other opportunities. They're sorely needed in the industry. The AGC will tell you that they're concerned about the lack of people going into this industry. If we do not get a skilled workforce trained up, our projects won't be on time. They'll be more expensive. And
follow up.
Yes,
and just
follow up.
One other, and I'm thinking of cities and having public contracts.
Mm-hmm.
What does this do to cities when they have their contracts with, say, in an enterprise zone, which is usually a low-income area anyway, and we want to revitalize the economy? Is this going to be putting an undue burden on those types of contracts where you're going into, you're trying to set up contracts to minimize the cost, and I don't know enough about this to understand what kind of impact that would have.
This bill doesn't really address enterprise zones specifically. This is specifically about apprenticeship hours on public projects. Last session, I did negotiate quite a bit with the counties and the cities. We're aware of the bill. They really didn't voice a lot of opposition. In last session, I don't know what the fiscal shows this session, but there really is no fiscal impact to cities or counties that I could find in the bill. Primarily, the reporting of these apprenticeship hours are done on the certified payrolls, which is already a requirement. And, you know, it doesn't add any other reporting burden to cities or county or any liability as such to them for that. This bill is basically shouldn't impact their financial ability, unless you were to make an argument that having apprentices on a job is more expensive to the project overall. I would probably dispute that. Apprentices work at a reduced wage on prevailing wage. They're the only ones generally that can reduce or work at a reduced wage to make up for their lack of productivity. And as they graduate in their productivity and graduate out of apprenticeship into journeyman, then their wage becomes whole. So I think it's pretty much neutral for cities as far as any kind of increased cost to them.
Okay, and Just to clarify, Representative Holvey, were you speaking in favor of the Dash 1 amendment?
I am speaking in favor of the Dash 1 amendment. It is the amendment that, the original bill just set a 15% across the board. The Dash 1 amendment actually lowered the penalty a little bit. It lowered it from a $5,000 down to a $3,000 maximum, and it starts out with a 10% requirement in 2010, as I said, and that is the Dash 1 amendment, and then graduates up in 2011 to 15, and or 2011 to 12 and a half, and then in 2012 it goes to 15. The, you know, and many other places, as you know, Portland, they have, and the PDC, they have apprenticeship requirements similar to this that are at 20% and all. And you may hear that there's not an ability to deliver apprentices around the state, and some will dispute that, but if the case is they can't find apprentices to meet these requirements, they just need to notify Boley that their committee is not able to supply those apprentices on a job, and Boley then has the ability to adjust the apprenticeship requirement percentage.
Senator George.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, good seeing you over here, and appreciate you come testify. My understanding is that a more moderate approach was actually killed in committee on the House side. Can you give me the politics behind that and why?
Yes,
we're seeing a more aggressive bill on this side when a more moderate one just died over there.
Yes, the one over there was specifically for ODOT projects, and it was a 10% requirement on ODOT projects only. And, you know, I guess from, and I voted against that. You know, I wouldn't say it was killed. It was just voted down. But,
you know. It's
killed. It's old. It was
dead. Potato, potato,
my friend.
Softly.
But you know, I think from the perspective of many, that just doesn't make sense to have a public policy that's just on ODOT projects as opposed to all public projects. I mean, the real issue is when these jobs are over, these apprentices really need to keep in the industry. They need to keep working to get through their apprenticeship to become journeymen. And so when you eliminate opportunities for them, they disappear. So I would just, you know, you just spend 3 years of investment trying to train somebody, and that opportunity disappears for them, and oftentimes they do too. And so, or they go to work in somebody who doesn't offer apprenticeship, and they never really get that journeyman card, and whatever training committee was paying for that apprenticeship ended up paying it for somebody who doesn't pay for any, and so there's no equity there for one thing. But this is really about making sure apprentices stay in the program and make it through to a career and without disappearing. And if you just limit it to one segment of public projects, it just seems like a partial policy. And so I think most people feel that this should apply to all public projects. I mean, that's what would do the most good in trying to get the number of people we need in the future.
Okay. Did that answer your question?
I think I'll probably get more when I get some additional testimony.
Yeah,
I'm just looking I'm trying to understand the real
questions.
Politics,
okay.
Madam Chair, behind how we have unions fighting, and then we have business. It seems like a very controversial bill to be coming at the last minute, so I'm just trying to make sure I understand the politics and understand the policy behind it. So I appreciate that.
And I don't know how controversial it is. I mean, even the unions that I've talked to that aren't really wild about this aren't really upset about it either. So, you know, it's most of the comments that I have received from unions is they either support it or they, you know, really, you know, could go one way or the other. And, you know, so the, you know, I'm certain that some contractors don't like it and some contractors like it, you know. So it's all about public policy for job opportunities for the future from my perspective.
Okay, any last comments? Because we do have quite a few other people.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing this bill.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
Thank you for being here today. And let's see. We have two sheets here. So I think next I'll call John Rakowitz. And I'm not sure who signed up first on these two sheets. So how about if I'll call both John Rakowitz and Rick Thomas together.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Rakowitz with AGC, Associated General Contractors of Oregon. AGC feels like it has no choice but to oppose this bill, and that does not mean, certainly does not mean, that we oppose apprenticeship. And that's why we supported this morning with our State Building and Construction Trade Council partner a 10% apprenticeship requirement for all ODOT projects. The current state of the affair looks like this right now. There has been, based upon a budget note in the last biennium, ODOT has been running pilot projects to determine what is workable and what isn't. We've had pretty fair, just over 10% in the aggregate on a handful of pilot projects. Based upon that, AGC and the Building Trades Council got together and started working through what would be doable and achievable in the next biennium. And we believe 10% on ODOT projects, we have the real ability in the beginnings of a reporting system. 2 weeks ago, an example of how complex this can be, three contractors went into ODOT and sat down and went through all the information that had been reported in the various ways, how it had been calculated, and discovered that there was a missing piece or two in the system. That is not a criticism of ODOT. That is simply you're building a system of reporting, which is not simple to do. So what we believe is Senate Bill 972, it would really be a leap of faith at 15% in just a couple of years, and that we just don't have the system set up to do it at this point in time. And, you know, unfortunately, the bill was killed this morning. I guess that's the way lobbyists talk. And it was a disagreement among the trades, the best I can tell, that killed the bill. So there's two other comments I'd like to make, and then I'd be happy to try to answer any questions. We invest, AGC as an industry association, invest a lot of money in apprenticeship and recruitment of the next generation. There's no doubt we, like everybody else, are competing for the next generation. We've gone so far as to create an interactive website that many of the Western chapters of the United States, AGC, wants to invest in. Reason being, we need tools that reaches the next generation. No doubt about it. So on the substance and the overall concept and policy, we're in agreement and highly supportive of apprenticeship. The other comment I will make is that Washington State, I checked again this morning, actually a longtime carpenter journeyman and who is now a partner in a big public works firm that is a member of ours, does a lot of public works in the state of Washington. To his knowledge, in the state of Washington, 15% craft neutral, which is not true of the bill and the amendments before you. It is craft specific, if I'm reading it correctly, is required in the state of Washington, and that is only as it relates to K-12. So again, it would look to us like they're building, they've got one system of public works, they're building a system of apprenticeship to see how it works, build the system, and make it work, and then you continue to build from there, depending on what the economy does, what your journeymen do, what everything happens from there. So that I'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
And John, have you looked at the Dash 1 amendments?
Yes. It is a graduated phase-in approach, 10, 11, 12, up to, starts at 10, goes to 15. But if I read it correctly, it still is by craft, and that is particularly difficult to do when you get in certain kinds of public works projects. Just don't allow for you to split people up in that manner if you have one or two in a particular craft, and then you immediately, how do you get 15% if you have, on a certain kind of job, you only need a particular kind of trade and craft, you know, one or two. How do you get 15% of craft? So that, in addition, makes it even more onerous in our view. So.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Rick Thomas, representing Associated Builders and Contractors today. Echo many of the opinions of AGC, Mr. Rakowitz. You know, our organization administers a variety of apprenticeship programs and a variety of different crafts in the industry. I may wonder why an organization then that does that would oppose a bill like this. And you know, basically, it's because sometimes setting these limits or these numbers, I should say, for the individual crafts, as Mr. Akowitz said, rather than project-wide, can be a bit challenging. I haven't had the opportunity to look at the Dash 1 amendments to know, you know, if that's been changed to a very large extent. But, you know, having those can create challenge. And I guess a specific example I'll cite is there's a small and prevailing wage projects, small aspect called testing and balancing contractors. They come in and measure the airflow that's coming through the ventilation systems towards the end of projects, now falls under prevailing wage. You know, very usually few hours involved on those projects, usually one person that comes through. You know, if you have a person that spends a day on a project, 8 hours, you know, how do you get 15% apprenticeship out of that project and have somebody just come along for an hour and a half or so of that aspect? It's approach that doesn't always work. Also, sometimes safety concerns can come into play. It may be a craft that, you know, for one reason or another, the contractors decided that they just want to use journeyman workers, journey level workers on the project because, you know, it may have some risk and they don't want to expose early term apprentices to a situation like that, and so don't have a high apprenticeship utilization for their trade on that. Also, economic conditions come into play. In slower economic times, contractor may make a conscious decision to keep journey level workers working but not take on additional apprentices during that time period, basically, you know, putting them in a situation of, do I want to lay off journey level workers that have been with our firm for several years to bring on additional apprentices just for what may be a project or something. And so those are just a couple of our concerns with the bill. Happy to answer any questions you guys might have.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for these witnesses?
Sure.
Senator George.
I think you said that you were in support of the approach in the House. Rick, what was your view of the bill on the House side, and what were some of the issues over there?
We really weren't too involved in that conversation. Most of our contractors are strictly construction-related, and so as a result, it being more of an ODOT highway situation, you know, we were not involved in that discussion.
And just one,
Senator Montesanderson.
Not knowing about how big crews are, but on these public works, what's the average number of people on a project? Let's do the minimum, because I think the minimum is a $750,000 contract. So,
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Montesanderson, they vary dramatically. At $750,000, you could be talking, when you're talking all public works contracts, you're talking everything from a reconstruction, a rehab of a building, to all sorts of very large projects. You're talking all highway as well. So you could be looking at a simple repair of a highway. You could look at a repaving of a highway. We are talking about that's the difficulty that we really have with it. I would echo the safety, the economic, all that. But the truth is that it's so all-encompassing in its scope that literally I could give you 6 or 8 or 10 examples, and they would all be true and be part of the answer to give back to you, because it just involves so many different sizes.
Well, let's choose a yes, follow-up, please. Let's say there's a heating cooling, a public works project where they need to do heating cooling on a community college or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And are there lots of apprentices for heating and cooling, and would this bill then, I mean, I guess what I'm getting at is, would we be putting, is it reasonable, will there be enough apprentice available for all the types of, since this is a huge scope, would there be enough apprentice available?
Chair Rosenbaum and Senator Montesanderson, again, not to, I guess, really kind of dodge, you know, a lot of it comes into play is when you're looking at the value of a contract and on a construction project, too. You know, $750,000 usually includes the materials, and so if it's a very material-intensive type of situation, you can have lots of costs but not a lot of hours. You know, but talking about your specific example on heating and cooling, you know, again, with that in mind, you know, it varies from project to project. I mean, we're all very concerned about the future of apprenticeship and making sure there's a high level of skilled workers. It's just in this situation, we're not sure that this completely gets us there, I guess, is the answer.
Madam Chair.
Senator Przanski, Senator Telfer had a question next, and then I'll call on you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In light of that, so if you had a project that had 10 people working on it because it was not labor-intensive, it had a lot of materials and stuff, that means you've got 10 people. It means you've got 15% of all those hours need to be done by apprentice, which is like 1.5 people.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's possible that you would have to hire an apprentice mm-hmm. in addition to the 10 that you need for that job. So you would be adding to the cost, the labor expense, because you need to fit that percentage. And so, but if you're talking about 10 people, you're talking about 1.5 apprentice.
Senator Rosenbaum, Vice Chair Telfer, that is part of the complexity. And if you go further than that, you're not going to have 10 of one craft, whatever the job is, whether it's a building job or a highway job. You're going to have multiple crafts on the job. Depending on the job, you could have a fair number of carpenters or a fair number of cement masons or a fair number of that. So it will be broken down into further bits than that. Per craft, which the bill and the dash one call for, then you have to figure out as a contractor how you come up with 15% per craft. So let's say you have four carpenters, you need 15%. Let's say you have two laborers and you have one operator. And two cement masons. You've got to figure out on that job 15% per craft. And we're talking about every single public works contract in the state of Oregon above $750,000. I don't know what we're talking about, but I think we've got to be talking in the thousands. I just don't know how many for sure.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on a minute. Senator Przanski had a question.
Yeah, don't run away yet. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm getting mixed messages, and it's not just from y'all, but just through the trades and crafts and the contractors. I understand we have a almost crisis situation, at least from what I hear from some people, as to not having people ready to step in and fill these slots in the future. And so if we don't have the apprentice programs in place, why aren't we looking for ways to open up the doors and getting more people? We have stimulus money coming into the state right now that could, in fact, maybe be used to actually help us get some of these programs up and running that would be long-term, ongoing jobs. And what I'm hearing is, well, this isn't quite right. What is right?
I think there's a variety of ways you can go. I mean, a lot of our organizations are trying to be active in the school system. I know that the budget constraints probably aren't going to allow for it this budget cycle, but I know that the Labor Commissioner has talked a lot about working to get some shop classes back into the high schools. We think that's probably one of the best ways that we can start to get a better flow of apprentices into the workforce is by working with the school system and, you know, and bringing some of those programs back and partnering with them and stuff.
Madam Chair, Senator Przanski, I'll give you a statistic. Besides transportation funding for AGC, the top priority was the reestablishment of folk education into the high schools for precisely the reason that you just pointed out. The average age of an apprentice right now when they join is about 28 years of age. What happened to them for 10 years? That's our issue. We believe we need to reach young people, women, and people of all the communities out there at the high school age. For that reason, we started the ACE Academy. And it's at the carpenter shop. We've spent a huge amount of money in years investing in that for exactly that reason. So the question becomes, right now, there are crafts, and I won't get specific because I don't like to speak on other people's behalf, but there are a number of crafts with over 25% in their journey, men and women, unemployed. So we've got a delicate situation to balance here. So do we believe in apprenticeship? Absolutely. Yes. Part of the issue is getting to the people at 16, 15, 17 years of age so they can flow smoothly into the apprenticeship, and then you don't have this big gap. That's one of the things we learned, and it's why we're investing so much money in trying to reposition our industry with the next generation. So we just don't believe a mandate, which is the way our contractors view it, of 15% on every public works within a two-year period in the phase-in, for every craft is really been thought through enough, which is why we teamed up, AGC did, with the building trades to do the 10% with ODOT projects to build out our system, test our system, and see what happens next and what works.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. And next I'll call Pete Savage and Cherry Harris.
Good afternoon, Chair Rosenbaum, committee. For the record, my name is Pete Savage. I'm the regional manager from the Pacific Northwest Regional Council of Carpenters. My area of responsibility is Oregon and Southwest Washington. We're a 25,000-member council with about 5,500 members living and working in Oregon, of which about 880 are apprentices at this time. A little background on myself. I'm a lifelong carpenter, not a professional lobbyist. I'm a member of Carpenters Local 247. I'm a trustee on the Oregon-Washington Carpenters Apprenticeship Trust that spends $2.3 million a year training apprentices in the state of Oregon. I'm a member of the South Waterfront Oversight Committee, a committee that's responsible for maintaining 20% apprenticeship on a series of projects in Portland. And I sit on the Prevailing Wage Advisory Committee for Boley. I'm here to speak in favor of Senate Bill 972-1. I think this is one of the only guarantees you have that you will see Oregonians for sure working on any stimulus-funded projects. And the reason for that is, as projects move around the country, as certain states get the money sooner than others, Oregon is fortunate in that we have an aggressive governor, and we've had projects going and bills going to get the highway stuff going. I think we'll see it first. Companies will move into our state to try and pick up the work, and for the most part, they'll bring their workers with them. As you heard from the AGC and the ABC, there's a great feeling on behalf of the contractors to take the forces with them, their workforce with them, that they're comfortable with. For us, I think when you see the reluctance on some contractors' part and maybe some in labor's part to back this bill, it's a comfort issue. When requirements are put on projects to hit certain apprenticeship numbers, numbers with diversity in them, it takes some of us outside of our comfort level. I think that really becomes the crux of the issue. This is something that's very doable. I think if you look at the South Waterfront Project, as I spoke about a little bit earlier, you will see that we have a 20% goal. We're achieving almost 25% apprenticeship on over six projects right now down there. The women and the people of color numbers are 17% females on the job, over 20% people of color on the job. Now, this wouldn't have happened if certain owners, some public, the PDC, the City of Portland, but some private, Gertie Needland, Williams and Dame, Simpson Housing, Trammell Crow Residential, if they hadn't put these requirements in the project, it wouldn't have happened, because the comfort level of the contractor and the unions is to go with what they know and the steady workforce they're used to using. There'll be a little debate about the penalties within this. I don't think that that's anything unusual in our industry. We are faced with penalties all the time for all different types of things, whether it's not making schedule, whether it's for damaging some historic part of the building that was already there, a tree, whether it's not making LEED standards, and often in a lot of cases it's for not making diversity and apprenticeship standards. This is nothing new to us, and it should not be a big fear on anybody's part. The South Waterfront Committee agreement is signed on to by many unions. So you would see the masons in there, the glazers, the laborers, the electricians, the operating engineers, the painters, and the bricklayers. So this is a group of unions that are used to making these numbers. Sometimes it's tough. We have to work around issues about
how do we get the apprentice on the job if there's only 10 for the crew? Typically, if somebody was running a crew of 10, they'd already have a couple of apprentices. In all of our contracts, we have specific apprentice language. So we're set with minimums of 15% and up to as much as 25% per our contract. So any contractor, we have over 350 contractors signed to our contracts, they all agree to make those numbers, and they all strive to do it. Now, sometimes they fall short. People start out with them as an apprentice. They grow within the company. They become a journeyman. They don't replace them with another apprentice. They just stay on there, and they have to go be reminded that they're below their apprentice ratio, and then they bring it up. This is not too much to ask out of a contracting group. I think you heard also from the AGC about getting into the schools and getting vocational education. We want to get to our apprentices earlier. That's absolutely what we all need to do. You know, I sit before you as the face of the construction worker in Oregon today, 48-year-old white male. If we strive and we push, and we should, to get the vocational education back, and these people come out at 18 and want to go into the trades, what are they then? They're not a journeyman. They're an apprentice. So as we as public, spending our public dollars, don't create slots for these apprentices to go into, we've wasted our money by putting vocational education back in the schools. You know, right now in the Carpenters organization, we have about 290 apprentices out of work. These are 290 apprentices who all paid their taxes to help fund these projects that we have a huge investment in training into, and who are ready and willing and able, some within a year, some within 3 years, to become journeymen and continue to build projects across the state. We need to make positions for them to keep going. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee. My name is Cherry Harris. I'm with the Operating Engineers, Local 701. We are a labor union consisting of about 4,000 members statewide in Oregon and about 5.5 counties in southwest Washington. I'm speaking today in support of Senate Bill 972-1. And just wanted to say I was speaking against the House bill this morning in its form because we are adamant that these apprenticeship ratios and apprenticeship requirements have got to be put on all publicly funded projects. That's the only way we're really going to drive this apprenticeship market. I spoke before a group, it's been 6 months ago, community folks in the Portland area trying to explain how apprenticeship works up there, because people think apprenticeship is like a college education. If you just pay enough money, you get into college, right? And hopefully, if you can sustain your funding, you come out the other end. Here's the problem with apprenticeship. It doesn't work that way. You only get through and graduate as an apprenticeship if there are job opportunities while you're learning. That's how you do this. So the more of those opportunities we can create, the more apprentices we can train. And so we feel very strongly that having apprenticeship ratios required on all publicly funded jobs is what's really going to drive that market. You've addressed a number of bills today that are all about ensuring diversity on projects, and this also is how you ensure diversity in the trades. It's by opening up those apprenticeship opportunities. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Senator Telfer.
Thank you. I think you said there were 900 carpenters, of which 270 were unemployed right now.
No, I said
what was the number?
There's about 900 apprentices, of which about 290 are unemployed right now.
290. So if there are 290 currently unemployed, why do we need more apprentices? And then the second part of that question is, if they're unemployed, does that mean journeymen are now filling those positions, and that the journeymen would then become unemployed if we use the apprentice ratios that you're proposing?
No, I don't believe that they will become unemployed. I believe there is a potential that a couple journeymen may miss some employment. Mm-hmm. I would tell you that as a journeyman, it's much easier to miss work than it was as an apprentice. As a person who was an apprentice in 1980, I can tell you that it was devastating to only have worked for a couple of contractors and then hit that long period of recession. An apprentice needs this help to get through it. Just because the 290 are unemployed does not mean we don't need more. The one thing we do know about this recession is it will end. And when it does, it's going to end with us building a lot of projects, and we're going to need more apprentices than those 290.
Other questions? Okay. Thank you both for your testimony.
You.
Next, I'll call Scott Winkles. Thank you for waiting so patiently.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Scott Winkles, representing the League of Oregon Cities, and I'm here to express our concerns with Senate Bill 972. I won't reiterate what was previous testimony, but I would like to point out that this 15% standard or the 10% standard may not be practicable in all areas of Oregon. For instance, there are parts of rural Oregon where the workforce may not be available given at a certain time when you need them, and the one of those compounding that concern is that BOLI may be able to issue a partial waiver for some of the requirements under the bill, but there's no time frame for which BOLI to do that. So if you have a small subcontractor, say a Tier 2 or a Tier 3 subcontractor coming into a project to do a small amount of work, and they can't find a sufficient number of apprentices, to get that waiver could take some time, putting delays on the project, increasing costs. Additionally, there are, as one of the other gentlemen alluded to, there may be safety reasons for why you would want journey level work on a project that would not, and there's no way to exempt for that purposes either. I think we would like to work with the proponents coming back with another incentive package for next session or possibly in the supplemental session that would increase the availability of apprenticeships. Construction trades is one issue where cities are concerned about the lack of workforce. We have a number of other career fields within local governments where we're having a difficult time finding a suitable number of applicants, and something I think this committee may want to work on in the future. With that, I'll open to your questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Yes, Senator Przanski.
Yeah, Mr. Winkles, can you tell us who made the decision to oppose the bill at this point for the League?
It was based on a historical position.
Historical position.
We opposed it in the last session, last time.
That's a nice segue for me. Can you tell us how much work you did during the last interim time and working with the proponents as you're now saying you want to work with them today?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Przanski, I cannot do that. I took over this portfolio very recently for the League. I don't know what my predecessor on this project did. I would be happy to find out for you and get back to you. I don't know what my predecessor on this portfolio
did. When did you take over? Early part of the session. But you know historically the League has opposed this. But you can't tell us today as to what's in your portfolio or your folder as to what work, if any work, was done in reaching out to work with the proponents on this.
I don't know what the lobbyist who had this portfolio previously did with Representative Holby or other proponents at the time.
So let me ask you what you have done since you've taken over the portfolio. The bill was on the House side. It was gotten stuffed over there. Now it's over here. What have you done this session in trying to work with him and bringing up your concerns that you've now expressed today?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Przanski, the events on the House side prior to the hearing, the decision to gut and stuff occurred. I hadn't talked to Representative Przanski in regards to this measure up till then. However, the issues surrounding the problems on this bill were complicated beyond my association. There were issues within building trades. There were a number of factors involved.
Scott, I'm not asking you to answer for the trades.
Yeah.
We know there's some issues going on between the trades themselves. what I'm asking you is, what did you do with Representative Hovey, knowing he filed the bill, knowing there historically had been, from what I'm hearing today, opposition, where he said that there hadn't been that much opposition in the past, but for the league, what have you done in working with him, either on the bill there or once you saw that it came up over on this side?
I have not done anything with Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Kwasniewski. I have not done anything with Representative Hovey in regards to this matter at this time.
And so, one last question, Madam Chair.
No question.
Yeah, regarding this historical perspective, what did you do in finding out from your team of city officials to determine whether or not they had the same position that you say that you learned through this historical perspective of reviewing whatever file you may have?
Senator Rosenbaum, Chair Przanski, I had conversations with public works officials in a number of cities. Springfield comes to mind immediately, but there were others.
Okay. Yes, Senator George.
Thank you. I was a lobbyist in this building for a long time, and so typically when you're a proponent of a bill, you try to find out everybody who's opposed and try to work with them. So following up with what Senator Przanski said, how many of the proponents of this bill came to the league, one of the most respected organizations in the building, and represents a diverse group of people, to find out what your concerns are of the bill and try to work through your problems? Do you see that in the portfolio, or did that happen earlier in the session?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator George, if I understand your question appropriately, my understanding is on the House side, what the intent was to apply the bill to ODOT. None of the proponents initiated contact with the league, to my knowledge, at least not since I had taken over this issue.
Follow-up.
So when this bill came up, which applies to all of yours, did anybody who's a proponent of the bill contact the league and ask what your concerns were on this bill?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator George, not to my recollection.
Thank you.
Okay.
Follow-up.
Follow-up, Senator Przanski.
But, Scott, let's be pretty frank here. You just said that the bill had changed. And so did you go to Representative Hovey, who was the sponsor of this bill 2 years ago, who reintroduced it this time, to tell him what, if any, concerns you or any of your cities had?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Przanski, my recollection goes, in 2007, we did have a meeting with Representative Hovey in his office. I was called into it. I'm not sure why, but my colleague, the previous holder of the public contracting portfolio for the league, was called in, and we explained our concerns at the time. That was in 2007.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. And we have two more people signed up to testify. I'm going to call them both at the same time. Jim Francisconi and Connie Ashbrook, please come forward.
Okay, thank you. Jim Francisconi, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. I'm testifying. I represent the carpenters and the operating engineers. Lynn Lehrbach, who I don't represent, from the Teamsters, has also sent a letter to you in support. There's just kind of one thing I would like to do is respond to a couple issues that have come up in a little bit of the testimony. Before I do, in this tough environment that I can't appreciate what you're facing, it's very important to accomplish multiple public objectives with the expenditure of tax dollars. So here with the stimulus package of both the federal and state, it's important to all of you, whether it be small business or whether it be Oregonians, that they get a chance to participate on these projects. And that's what Pete Savage was talking to you about. So Representative, when we're going to expend these amount of dollars, let's make sure that there's some apprenticeship opportunities for poor folks, for women, and for people of color, which is the second principle. Part of the reason that CETA had a mixed result is you can train people, And Connie is one of the best there is at preparing pre-apprenticeships. And it was the timing of these hearings that we just had on your work sessions on the diversity bills couldn't have been better. Because if you don't have slots to put people, especially in this economy, women, people of color, and poor people that are trained by non-tax dollars, the unions themselves, won't have a chance to participate. So what we've tried to do, what Representative Holvey has done, is compromised from the 15% to the 10% to try to get some agreements when most of the rank and file support this. It's hung up at the political level from doing the right thing. So the other one misimpression that was, so it's interesting to me that AGC would be supporting kind of the training side, but not making sure there's some opportunities available for people once they're trained. The ODOT bill that's been talked about here today, Senator Telfer, was craft specific, and AGC supported that this morning. Now they come and use craft specific as a reason to oppose it when Representative Holvey's bill is not craft specific. It's aimed at the contractors. That was another compromise that Representative Holvey was willing to do to meet AGC's requests, because I've had some personal conversations with the president of AGC. The other thing, Senator Anderson, on your availability, if you strictly apply, and I don't think you meant to do this, again, women, people of color are never going to have any shots. That's why there need to be, you got to marry supply with demand. And that is very, very important here, and which is the heart of what this bill is about. So what we're asking you to do is to refer it to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. That's important. A work session, and we're sorry, really sorry, that you senators are put in this position, but a work session that was talked about never was given, so that everybody would have had an opportunity to work this through. But I'm very confident, based on my own conversations with the industry as well, that this is doable. And the reason I know this is because there's a document that will pass around. And it's not only the South Waterfront Agreement on the first side, but there's something called CAWS, Construction Apprenticeship Workforce Solutions, which is a private sector effort, not a public sector, even though public sector belongs to it. Hoffman, Skanska, Turner, Howard S. Wright, Walsh, the Port of Portland, they all belong to this. And they've all agreed to a 20% apprenticeship requirement on public on private projects. And the reason they agreed to this is they know it's a diversity effort, that without apprenticeship opportunities, there's no place to put poor folks, women, people of color that are being trained. So here we could have a state authorizing federal and state stimulus dollars, not putting half a requirement on publicly funded dollars that they're willing to do on privately funded dollars. That doesn't make any sense. So we're asking you to support this with a due pass and referral to Ways and Means.
Okay.
We
usually let both people talk, and then we'll take questions. So why don't you go ahead?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Connie Ashbrook, Director of Oregon Tradeswomen, and I'm here to speak in favor of this bill. I'm here to speak from the worker, from the apprenticeship side. I worked myself in the building trades for 17 years, and I got into the building trades through a CETA-funded pre-apprenticeship program. And I also served on the State Apprenticeship Council for 9 years. So on that position, I saw various perspectives of the different building trades and how it is different between highway and building, and it is different between the operators and the laborers and the electricians, et cetera. Last year, we graduated 92 women from our pre-apprenticeship program, all interested in working in the building trades, and we had 42 girls attend our girls' construction camp, also interested in eventually moving through the pipeline into the trades. For blue-collar workers, apprenticeship is the route to the middle class. Apprenticeship is the college or the higher education for blue-collar workers. Studies have shown that employers gain about $1.38 for every dollar that they invest in apprenticeship, and the federal government gains about $50 for every dollar that they invest in apprenticeship. Apprenticeship is the best way to pass on skills, and this is the credential for blue-collar workers. This is our college degree. Last year, since July 1st of 2008, 1,700 new apprentices have entered the apprenticeship system in Oregon. So even in our tough economic times, there is a demand for new apprentices. So please support this bill. I think it's in the best interest in the state to have this kind of training available for blue-collar workers. Thank you.
Thank you. And now we'll take questions. Senator Telford.
Thank you.
Jim Francisconi.
Jim, I'm confused. This comes from a person, myself, who built a number of buildings, oversaw urban renewal development in the downtown Bend area, built parking structures, etc. So when you say this is not craft-specific, tell me what this first paragraph, Section 4, says when a contractor or subcontractor that is a party to the contract. So if I have a contractor, one is a painter, and another one's a framer. So how is that not craft-specific when they each have to do the 15%?
Well, the intent is that it applies to the contractor, okay? So I'm saying that. But if it's unavailable, and that's the part which is also in the bill, if they can't do that, then there's no penalties, and they have to petition Boley, as you said earlier.
Follow up. So it is craft specific. It's depending on the availability.
It's contractor specific. So
which is not craft?
Not necessarily. I don't mean to be playing games with you. But Senator, I do want to make this point, and it's in the written testimony that Pete Savage gave you. There's testimony that says, on the penalty side, let's not have any penalties on craft-specific if it's not available. So it's further language that we're willing, I want to say publicly, and I said it over on the House side, that we're willing to refine to meet your objection, Senator.
Okay. Additional questions for these witnesses, Senator George.
Thank you, Madam Responsible. Jim, I want to kind of follow up on what Senator Przanski said. Typically, when you're advocating for a bill, you are to go out and try to find out everybody who could possibly object and try to deal with their issues. And we had AGC, ABC, League of Oregon Cities. I don't see the other building trades folks here. Apparently, their bill got killed on the House side. It seems like to me that this bill is in really raw form, that we're a long ways. The House has been working on it for the whole session. They've just killed a bill over there. Can you give me some background on what the Carpenter Union did to try to bring some kind of consensus?
Sure.
Because this is coming late.
I mean, I appreciate you asking because I didn't want to get into it, but I appreciate your asking. So what I did is I called the president of AGC, Andrew Beyer, who wanted a work session on this bill over in the House to try to work out some of these compromises. That's what he told me. I reached out to them to try to, on behalf of the clients that you're talking about. I also reached out to other contractors because it is very clear that we can work this out. The word did get back to me, and Andrew called me himself saying that a change had been happened. They wanted to go with Representative Schaffler's bill. So what we're trying to do is work towards a work session that could bring these parties together, but a decision was made by some people to only talk to a certain group instead of this. And it is that ultimately, if you don't have apprenticeship requirements on all public, first of all, it doesn't make any sense just from a public policy standpoint. And second of all, there's no place for the apprentices to go. So my clients felt so strongly about that we're putting you in what I know is a difficult position.
One quick follow-up. I guess what, Jim, I appreciate that. I guess what I'm trying to get at is that this bill has been introduced several times in other sessions. And so we had full 2 years, and I think what Senator Przanski was pointing to the league for and saying, hey, what have you guys done is try to solve these. This thing sat around for 2 years, and then all of a sudden, here it is, end of April, and this is sort of blown up in our face today. And I feel like the parties are pretty far apart, and I'm not sure. I'm trying to figure out how the advocates got to the point today where this is put onto our schedule, and and you're willing to kill a bill that seems like a good, at least a start of a compromise on the House side.
Well, Chair Rosenbaum, Senator George, you know, I have some past experience in the political process, none at the state level.
More spicy where you're from.
Well, it's amazing to me, frankly, that, and I want to say this carefully, but that some, at last minute, two of Representative, not one, but two of Representative Holvey's bills were gotten stuffed, and we saw the bill today or yesterday. It's just what I'm saying to you, Senator, is the process is a little different than I'm used to.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Any other questions for these witnesses? Okay. I do not see any questions for you, so thank you both for your testimony. Is there anyone else who wants to testify on Senate Bill 972? Okay. Actually, we're a little past time, but we do have this room for a little while longer. I'm going to recess the committee. Briefly, we're in recess. Okay, committee will come back to order. Members, when we recessed, we were in a public hearing on Senate Bill 972.
No, we were in a public hearing.
And I'm going to close that public hearing. And members, we are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.